It's the Daily Talk Show, episode 332.
And Josh Peterman, right in the middle. What's up, bro?
I always felt like I was a strong 332.
Yeah, it's well, a good number.
You were last on at 188 and we're in Washington Square Park in New York City.
So it's almost double again, but not quite. In fact, it's not double.
It feels like a long time ago that we last had you on.
Yeah, that was like 6 months.
Yes, just after grand final last year. So you were, we caught you at a time where you were kind of just frolicking around the world.
Yeah, I was literally just living my best life, doing absolutely nothing everywhere.
You were in a good vibe. I'm not saying you're in a bad vibe now, but.
Yeah, I'm a negative energy now.
No, you're definitely not. But it's funny, like we're at home now, we're in Melbourne and we're amongst life. When you're away, it's
you have
like
a holiday vibe.
It's a different, it's a different energy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're definitely lighter. On your feet, there's this sort of an air about you that, like, it's a give no fucks. Yeah.
What annoyed me,
here we go,
about your trip
straight
was
away.
After you left us, you went to Italy, you went to Venice,
yeah, and then Toscana.
Oh, just the pizza,
and then Cinque Terre.
Oh, the food you were eating.
Oh, it was so good.
I mean, you earned it. You worked hard up until that point. What was the best thing that came from that trip?
The carbicide that I committed. it's the food and the wine. I stayed on this farm in Tuscany, a little place called Diaceroni Agriturismo. Oh, it sounds like a
imagine me.
It sounds
to
like
say
a Julio Iglesias song. And I had 5 days there, and that was just like Tuscan rolling hills. And I mean, I arrived, and on my doorstep, there's like breads and cheeses and wine. They're like, you know, welcome. And I'm like, sure, doll. That's going to be my life for the next 5 days.
Were you by yourself doing that trip?
Yep.
What do you like about traveling by yourself and what don't you like?
I like that I get to choose my schedule and that I don't have to answer to anyone.
Well, don't have kids, mate, because then that's fucking out the window.
Yep. Yeah. I like that I get a lot of sort of introspective time, which I really like, and yeah, that's probably what I don't like is I don't get to canoodle.
The old canoodling.
Yeah.
Do you canoodle with your phone much? Like, are you a guy who you as in
what is that? What is that?
Or do you use your phone? I was basically just like
spoon.
I tend to when you travel. Do you think you use your devices like your phones and stuff more or less?
I use it a lot when I use it, and then I have times of the day. Like on that farm, it was like between 9 a.m. and 9 p.m. The phone, like in the villa, and me not in the
villa. Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
And so what would you actually do on a farm for the whole day? Do you just eat cheese and walk around?
Yeah, did plenty of horse riding.
Oh, that's cool.
Nature walks. They had a pool.
Yeah.
They had a winery. So, I was intoxicated a lot. I was very dry. There was a lot of salt.
Just dehydrated all the time.
Don't you? I get reflux when I've been to Italy, like salamis and cheeses.
You're
and
actually
just
slowly being cured. I think that's the process of what's happening. So you probably came out just at the right time just before you.
Probably. I did have a lot of Nexium there.
What's that?
It's like a hardcore anti-reflux.
Oh, okay. Like so the chewable ones, they're nothing compared.
That's like a Rennie or a
that's a lolly. It's a lolly, guys.
Yeah, that's like the warhead of anti-reflux. This was like, this is hardcore stuff.
Anytime you have to take medicine to sort of balance out your diet, there's probably something that's off in that moment.
Yeah, like, but it's Italy. It's not all the time.
Yeah.
It's still where I believe my soul lives.
Yeah.
Italy. Yeah.
Well, you're a fat opera singer trapped in a ripped dude's body. Because if you haven't heard him sing, he can sing like no tomorrow.
Yeah.
And it's not standard singing. It's operatic. Is that that the style you
got?
So we're back down on the ground now. That's seems like a lifetime ago.
It does, but then I'm off again tomorrow night.
To Italy?
Thursday morning. No, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Where are you going?
To London, but probably.
Just like a little trip.
Cheeky traipse over.
Actually, so you speak Italian.
No, not fluently.
But you sing Italian.
If you sing Italian, you fucking speak it.
I only had
to say a few words and I was like, I think I'm fucking fluent. Yeah. But I was at a gelato place the other day, and there was a lady who was determined to just speak Italian to the Italian like gelato people.
Oh no! Did she have her phone out doing the conversion?
No, she didn't have that.
I know the one.
But it was just like she was just saying a few words. Like every time she like, is it C? Is C yes?
C.
Yeah. And so she would say C a lot, and then was saying a few things. But it was giving me anxiety. But Bree was like, "You should be celebrating. That's awesome that she's doing it." But I feel like when I came back from Thailand, I learned like sawadee krap and kapung krap, all these words. But I never had the guts to actually say it at a restaurant, just in case. It's like, yo, bro, you might be at a Thai restaurant, but can you fucking settle down? Have you ever been at a restaurant and pulled out some Italian? When is it? When does it feel appropriate to do it?
All the time.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I always try and order or just say mille grazie at the end. Or
as in Melbourne, when you're in Melbourne.
In Melbourne, at Pellegrini's, I'll do it all the time.
Oh, great.
What I have thought is that it wouldn't sound as weird to them, I don't think. If you're just finishing, you know, chow or, you know, it's literally they're interpreting it as the word that we know it as.
But that would be seeing me sweating and being like, you know, there's something.
That would be concerned for your fucking well-being more so than whether
but
you're
also,
delivering.
But also, not to be racist, but I look more Italian than you.
Yeah, you do have
in
that
fact,
vibe.
I had a...
What do I look, by the way?
You look Aryan.
Aryan.
Well, you what is that? You're Dutch.
Yeah, my pa was Dutch.
Yep, very Dutch.
Tall Dutchman.
Or Scandinavian.
Oh, I take Scandi.
Yeah.
That's
good. Which is good because...
They do good furniture.
Yeah, and they also do hot.
Yeah.
Really well.
This is the closest you've ever been to being called a Viking, Josh.
Yeah.
So take it.
Do you know Game of Thrones? Do you watch Game of Thrones?
I do, but I watch it through my parents' Foxtel account.
complicated.
And they only have Foxtel for Fox footy, really. But now KO... has come out.
Yes.
So does KO like replace, any need for Foxtel?
It replaces any needs for the sports component of Foxtel. And I mean, they were paying 100 and something a month on Foxtel and then KO's 25 a month.
It's amazing. I couldn't believe those deals because you wouldn't, I'm guessing, get like NBA and stuff. You probably still need League Pass for that.
You get all of that.
Really?
Yeah. You get 50 plus sports channels.
This sounds like a brand integration.
It's not. I just really love it. Or 50 plus sports, whatever it is. It's a lot of sport. Yeah. But get back to your point. Yeah. Now I can't watch Game of Thrones.
Oh, no.
Because
mum and dad have canned the subscription.
Yeah. And I was just using it off their pass.
Definitely not.
So I got the first app.
Yeah.
And then Monday's app, I haven't been able to watch. Well, so I just want to stay off social media so that no one, you know, gives me spoiler.
Well, we won't spoil it because I don't watch it at all. But we were yesterday.
I watched two seasons and then I dropped off.
So you actually committed to some and then didn't?
I committed when everyone, it was like five seasons in and I did two seasons. I just lost interest. And then I picked up Vikings and then I was like, this is a bit more full on. And then I dropped off
that. Like pornographic? Is that right? Why you...
No.
Have gotten rid of your porn addiction because you're just looking at
I don't watch
addiction.
Porn.
Hold up. Vikings is it's not, sort of addiction. The same with less fantasy. I watched a bit of Vikings.
Yes, and that's what I liked about it. I didn't like how much fantasy was
you
in.
You don't like dragons?
No, not really. I don't.
But don't you just see them as like as like old school nuclear bombs? No. Like that's what they are? It's a metaphor?
I've never liked sci-fi and then when it's gone too sort of magical, I haven't enjoyed it.
You'll hear Tommy during the screening saying, oh, this is a bit silly.
You can't ride a dragon, can you? Anyway.
You've got to suspend your disbelief. But the
Well, if you had one... You would 100% fucking ride it.
If I had a dragon.
Yeah, you would. Of course you would
ride
it.
So this is the reason I don't have these, I don't watch this show because then you get in conversation about if you had a dragon.
You've got your own fantasies, like whether you're going to live in Albert Park or not. That's a, but the,
banter.
Is it the sex scenes in Vikings versus Game of Thrones, which is sort of more full on?
As in...
Well, because
what's full on?
Well, I don't know. I guess like...
How close to porn are they?
Yeah.
Very close.
It's softcore, really.
It's softcore. Well, you see,
Are they sort of different sort of leagues or are they all very sort of similar?
You're seeing bush. You're seeing like full nudity.
Yep.
Do you see full peen? I don't think you see that.
Maybe a little, not like a little penis, but like a little bit of
a little
penis.
Bit of peen.
This is definitely going to be a snippet. For Instagram.
Yeah, that's
okay. The reason I was bringing up Game of Thrones is because yesterday we were trying to work out whether it's, is it medieval? We couldn't work out what medieval means.
Yeah, medieval is like, it's like Shakespearean times, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, or pre-Shakespearean times.
I feel like anyone who's describing medieval, they end the sentence with, right?
It's,
right?
It's medieval with a dust of magic on it, because it's medieval was a legit time in history.
But a bit silly. Silly medieval.
It's pre-sewage. I know that.
Okay.
Yeah, it's when you shat and then just threw it out the window and said, oi, old mate.
Really? Yeah.
Watch my shit.
I feel like that would ruin any sex scene, knowing that there's just shit everywhere.
Would it ruin it though?
Yeah, maybe not.
I think we've painted you, Josh, as a guy who just travels around the world. What I love about what you do, even since when I met you a couple of years, maybe 4 years back, 3 years back, you were in the fitness game. Hold on.
4 years back.
Was it 4 years? 3 years?
I remember meeting you at high school when you were years below me.
Really?
And you were a shocking little human.
Yeah, exactly.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
Can you describe Tommy? Can we just go into that for a second?
A hoodlum.
Yeah.
A hoodlum.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A teacher described him. Surprised I didn't bash you. Tommy was described by a teacher. He was his friend was in a class, and Tommy rode his bike past a classroom, and the teacher said, "See that Tommy jacket boy? He's a naughty boy."
Yeah,
probably sums it up.
I've got
also you started puberty a lot earlier than a lot of the other boys. Really? He was a big naughty boy.
I took steroids. No, but I guess meeting you as a reformed hoodlum as an adult is when we sort of met and did some work together. But even then, you were doing your personal training stuff, and you had your business, and you were doing more. You were sort of breaking into the industry, would you say?
Breaking back into it.
Breaking back.
So I took like 18 months out.
That's right. You did the 10 tenors.
10 tenors. I did
traveling the world again. Fuck you. You just are a guy.
I like to travel. I did West Side Story. A couple of other things.
Yeah.
And that was all up to about 2000. I did Hairspray over in the UK as well.
And then
at the end of 2013, I was like, just need a wee break here. Mm-hmm. And so I took about 18 months off to start this fitness business. And then I just missed what I love doing most.
And now you're back into it. But what I love about, I mean, I don't even feel like that's my existence, but looking to you and sort of the performances you do, the traveling, the touring, is you do these real hard stints of time where you put it in.
Like projects.
Yeah, they're like projects, yeah. I guess.
I was reading an article where they're talking about that's where the whole sort of workforce is going. It's sort of like Hollywood style where you spend 6 months, you all come in as teams, you work on something and then you leave. And you might work with someone again, but you might not.
Have you had to adjust to doing those projects or sprints or dedicated extended periods of time to then having nothing?
The thing is when I'm doing nothing, I feel like I'm, other than that holiday that I took, which was just because I was like, I'd just done a 13-month project, which was beautiful, the Carole King musical, which really took it out of me because the role was so mentally taxing. I just needed like 3 months out. After that, I can't say I've done another big show or whatever, but I've been in big time creative mode building towards something. So sometimes that project work is sort of unseen. Work and it's just behind, and then last week announced an album tour, but we've been working on the back end of that for months. When I say we, my management.
So maybe it's the what people see is the projects.
Yeah.
They're seeing the output of the project, and then there's all that time, because there's not one without the other, right? You need that time off to
totally, and it's the same in every industry. I'm sure that we see the new Air Jordans that come out, but
they've been working.
Michael's been working on that since 1992.
No, well, they're definitely, like, I know, like with events, once the event finishes, a lot of conferences, it's like, okay, like the next week, the conference organizers are back in a room organizing for the next year.
Yeah.
It's pretty crazy. Mm. What's it like? What's the sort of time from when you find out that you're in a musical to it actually being in production? What's the time?
So I found out about Beautiful in January 2017. I started auditioning in July 16. I went into rehearsals in August 17 and finished the show in September 18.
That's crazy.
Isn't that nuts?
God. And so how much time are you putting in before you've even landed the gig? Like is there a bunch of people out there that wasted 4 months of their life trying to get this job and you won it?
Oh yeah, of course.
Far out.
Yeah. And then, you know, depending on the role, there's a pre-rehearsal component. I mean, Esther, who played Carol, was She's not a pianist, but Carol has to play the piano, and she was she was working on all the piano stuff for months and months and months prior to the contract starting.
How does the business side of that work? Like, are you contractors? Are you employees? Do you, like, how does
it work? You are contracted on what's called a run of play, and that's a for however long the show runs from day one of rehearsal until up to 14 months, and at 14 months you get to renegotiate. Beautiful ran for 13 months, so that was the run of play ended up being 13 months.
Do you get to, going into it, you know, work out how much they're going to pay you? Can you...
Is it negotiating?
Yeah, that's why you have a manager and agent. Yeah, feedback.
So they go hard.
Yeah, well, my manager, James, is probably the best guy. Yeah, so you can't call him a bad guy. No one would call him a bad guy.
We need James.
Yeah. James is the bomb.
And so from a promotional point of view, do they say, okay, this is what we're going to spend on advertising and you're going to be on trams, or you're going to be like, what's...
They don't really tell us about that. They just do their thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's sort of above us. Like, it's like Josh and... whoever else in the cast, you guys focus on the art and we'll focus on trying to get people to see your art.
Yeah.
What about social media stuff? Are they now saying, we want you to create or post X, Y, and Z?
I think it's just sort of open. It's more like what not to do. And the general thing is, if you think this could be something that you shouldn't do, chances are don't do it.
Yeah, and this podcast is probably one of those things. Yeah.
But I'm not in a contract.
Brand damaging, this podcast. Totally.
And for me, definitely.
And so from a management point of view, are they all year round looking for stuff? Like, what is the typical relationship of a manager?
I chat to my manager every day about something. Generally the difference between an agent and a manager is an agent will get briefs coming in via email and they'll think about who on their books is appropriate for that particular brief, whether it's, you know, film, TV, musical theatre, and then they will submit those people back to it. Whereas, then they'll get an audition if they're lucky, and then it's about getting the gig and then negotiating a contract. And that's a very black and white version of it. I'm sure lots of agents do more than that, but a manager is more like out there looking for, actively looking for ideas. And like my manager and I, I'll just call him James.
Yeah.
James and I have worked for months on putting together all the pieces for this album tour. That's not something is expected from an agent. So, you know, we've been working tirelessly for, I would say since the start of the year on this. I've been working creatively since the album came out in April on ideas for a tour. But I literally couldn't have done this shit without him.
And does James have multiple clients at once, and do you collaborate?
He does, but I think James would probably say that I hog James' time. I definitely hog James' time.
Why not? I got asked yesterday about, I don't know if it was like, can you give me advice? It was a question that was basically saying, what do you think about this? Which I guess is someone asking you for their advice, for your advice. And I struggle, and it was around podcasting, and I struggle sort of slipping into, you know, I guess all I've got to go on is my experience. And sometimes you can be jaded in certain respects to certain areas, or know how hard it was for you, and then that's the advice you end up giving. And so it's like I always have to sort of double check myself on giving advice. I could imagine you've been asked advice around getting into musical theatre. And I know from your journey that it's been tough at times. How do you go about giving advice when someone is asking you, I really want to get into musical theatre?
I think when I started, I would be like, I'd Tony Robbins it. A bit like
big which hands, I think, which, clapping.
The little Tony Robbins. And I think that's just sort of like my nature to try and, you know, be positive and inspirational, and that's sort of very normal for me. But recently when people contact me semi-often about it, students or people who want to become students or pursue...
Josh, I know Josh Jansen was...
You knock on the door.
Knocking on the door.
I would like to do a bit of musical theatre.
I think you could give it a bit of razzle dazzle.
I've definitely got the razzle, not so much dazzle, unfortunately. You need both.
You do need both. I think now I basically say that it's so much more hard work, persistence, dedication, mindset than it is talent. Mm-hmm. Like the amount of talent really at the start is, you know, if you've got some God-given gift, that I think that's really rare to have that. But probably like I always bring it back to athletes. Like I reckon the AFL has, you know, 30 guys who are just above and beyond athletically or have some mm-hmm. other gift. There's a whole bunch who are probably in the middle mm-hmm. and the ones that work hardest, who train hardest, who are most dedicated, who are most focused, who do probably the most work on their mindset and mm-hmm. stuff are the ones who have long careers. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily just talent only gets you so far, probably in any career.
Yeah, but the great thing about the athletes is you can actually watch them all with KO. Yeah.
And this is true. And so are you saying that you're – advice or, you know, your suggestion or your conversation with these people is more real now than...
Oh, yeah.
Just as in real to true to your experience.
Yeah. So less motivational maybe?
Yeah. Less Paul Newrub.
Who's the example? Who's the more the real person these days that's dishing up advice?
Probably Jay Pizzle.
Yeah. Who?
That's me.
Oh, Jay
Pizzle. Okay, we'll start from you, Jay Pizzle. It's got cut through clearly.
Yes, yeah.
And what do you think people are? How do you think people are responding to this?
I think it always like breeds an internal conversation rather than going, yeah, cool. Well, I'm gonna do it then. Mm-hmm. Like I'm gonna do a musical.
Yeah.
It makes them think a little bit more. Do I really want to pursue this? Which, you know, it's a really fucking tough industry.
Yeah.
Mm. It's super competitive, especially in this country. You know, there's only ever half a dozen shows on at any one time max. So let's say like 120 people are doing musicals in this country at any
Jeez.
One time. Like that's not yeah. really very much. So
it's good yeah. being tough, I guess, early, because it's like if they can get past you being real about it, yeah. then they're probably more likely. If you have to sort of sugarcoat it up front, yeah. you're probably – you know, setting them up for failure.
So it's like 90s pop culture reference, which obviously I'm into, but it's like yeah. facing Vulcan in the gauntlet, in the gladiators, but like, oh, yeah. like he's the first one up. And then once you get past that, you should be able to get
through it. And so you're, are you Vulcan? Is that what you're saying
now?
Yeah.
Can I be, who's the guy from Who Dares Wins?
Mike Whitney.
Mike Whitney. Yeah, you can be, Mike Whitney. Yeah, you can yeah. be, yeah.
I'd love to have Mike Whitney on the show.
I'd love to.
Yeah.
I'd love to.
I'd love it too.
I'd love to.
I'd love Tanya Zayeta on here too.
Oh, yeah. Tanya would be great. Do you know Tanya?
No, never.
I'm sure you saw Tanya at Boutique a few times, the nightclub. I used to see her at Boutique, nightclub in Melbourne.
Did.
Yeah, bloody hell.
You probably promoted it.
No, I didn't.
Did you ever, TJ,
Never promoted a club. I just got VIP passes. That was my mission. If only I channeled my fucking energy somewhere else.
So free drinks, is that what that gives you?
Free
what?
Entrance, not lining up, bring people in, straight up, rock star entrance.
Mm. Did you get free drinks?
Free drinks, yeah.
So you were a promoter?
No, I never. I looked at the promoters growing.
You looked down on them?
No, I looked at the promoters growing up and thought, fucking, like, they had some resilience in like just always having a front about how good the club was, mm. even if it was no one there.
Yeah, I promoted at 7.
Did you?
Yeah. Do you want to know something really bad?
What?
I promoted at 7 for about 18 months and then I had my 18th at 7. Yeah. And they were like, it's your 18th? I'm like, yeah. I'm 18 now. So it's like, let's so just funny. Forget about the
It was so now. Lax clubs in Melbourne, like getting in.
I've never been to a club.
Good.
If you can believe it. I know I look like a clubbing kind of guy.
Maybe that's the dazzle you're searching for.
It could be. No, I remember filming at nightclubs when I was like 16. I went to Colonial Hotel. Would you count that as a nightclub?
Oh, they did the
It was all the uni events.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
But you were there to film?
Yeah.
You can't say you've been.
So I'd film and things, but I would get free drinks or whatever. So I'd give it to a mate who would go and get pissed.
Is this at night time though?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was in the evenings.
Okay.
Yeah, when all night clubs sort of happen.
Yeah, I know, but I could see maybe you just filming during the day.
Yeah, you could definitely had that sort of vibe.
You know, that's the ugliest thing in the world is a nightclub during the day.
What
do
they ever
do? They use them for anything during the day?
I saw one on the weekend in Port Melbourne in the back streets in the industrial area.
It wasn't Neverland, was it?
Maybe.
Because Neverland, I remember I was very excited when I was making my year 12 film.
Oh, no, it's not there.
I nearly got, we had pyrotechnics and we needed to find somewhere to film this scene. And they had like a view of the city. But anyway, it turns out the pyrotechnic guy had double booked with a 30th birthday on Beach Road in Albert Park.
Yeah.
And so we ended up setting up like a marquee tent thing because it was raining, and we filmed their pyrotechnics for the party with us in the foreground for the scene.
We stole their pyrotechnics.
Yeah, I think it cost me $300
for the marquee.
How much do you reckon the pyrotechnics were? I reckon the guy seemed to be doing a lot of favors for a lot of people, so I don't know what was going on, but it turned into a beach scene because it was at the Anglers Club.
That's a good idea.
Drugs.
Yeah, exactly. Drugs. Yeah, it has that vibe. But you could definitely, like batch things. I tried to get it at the Melbourne jail because there was a good view, but they just got installed fake grass and they were worried that we're going to catch the whole grass on fire.
It's probably a worry.
Have you done any shows that have had pyrotechnics in them?
I did this little one on Australia Day at the Sydney Opera House that probably had about 60,000 people there and about $10 million worth of pyrotechnics.
Really?
Yeah. I got to sing Nessun Dorma, which is like the Pavarotti aria. Yeah. So if you want to head over to my Instagram, you can definitely watch that if you scroll down. That's about six rows.
I've seen that.
It was the most... I tried to undersell it, but now I'm just going to oversell it.
Please do.
It was the most epic fucking gig I've ever done in my life. I made so many little turds in my pants before I went on. I was so nervous.
Did they give you any... So did any pyrotechnics go off during your bit?
Yeah, it was... It was literally like...
that's right. I've seen... This is like fire... It's like fireworks?
Fireworks going off everywhere. The opera house and going off the harbour and like... This was nutcase. Like if I would literally need to rob the Commonwealth Bank... to be able to afford this to do a video clip.
So
like
it wasn't
myself.
Part of someone else's 30th that you were just sort of in the foreground.
No, it was a part of Australia.
And so what's that process of having the nerves and actually doing it anyway? What do you say to yourself?
I go into mantra land, like
Instagram moment.
No, I definitely do a lot of, I mean, we talked about this last time, mm-hmm. avid meditator, love the meditation, love what it's done for my mindset. But in moments of high pressure, it's like I can go into a series of mantras that are about more than the performing. Like I'll talk about I'm still, I'm grounded, I'm free, I'm powerful. And that's the sort of stuff I repeat. They're my like go-tos. And then, you know what, as soon as that music started, it was just a sea of people all on the foreground of the opera house.
Amazing.
And I'm sort of halfway through the song. I was just loving it, but I was sort of halfway through the song and then the choir kick in and I got a moment to just sort of take it all in before the big ending. And I was just like, this is the coolest thing in the history of your life, Pittman. I was sort of witnessing Jay Pizzle. I was sort of witnessing my own
life. Like out of body experience.
It was so out of body. Eckhart Tolle probably refers to as the observer. Yeah. It was like I was observing my own life and I'm like, it actually doesn't get better than this.
Yeah.
Bring it home, baby. Was the sort of vibe. And it was just electric. And then I didn't know that the fireworks were going to go off. Mm-hmm. So I'm like,
surely they should tell you.
No, they said, do you want to know what happened? John Foreman's, who was the creative director, said, do you want to know what happens? And I'm like, absolutely not. Don't tell me what happens. Because I just want to be in the moment. And
an elephant comes on stage.
Josh is riding it.
Yeah, just riding. Pyrotechnics either way.
That was a subtle pyrotechnic job that I've got to do.
I feel like in the same scenario, if I was as talented as you were in that experience, I feel like every behind the scenes thing I watch of different performers, they're always saying, my fucking in-ears.
Taking it out.
Yeah.
Is that what happens?
Because you're talking about this meditative sort of mantra thing, but I feel like most realities, it's people swearing about the in-ears.
Okay, the in-ears were golden. I got some fresh in-ears for my B-Day in October.
Yeah.
BYO in-ears. Is that what people are doing?
Yeah, you've got to have your own in-ears.
Yeah, but Josh will suck them.
AirPod reference. My AirPods got waxed and I Googled how to fix it and they said to suck on the...
You think I didn't see this episode?
Yeah. It was just sort of disgusting.
I know all about this.
Are they molded? Are they specifically molded for your ear or are these like ones like...
No, they're Shure 535. Mm-hmm. So they're almost as good as you can get sound quality without being molded, but they were banging.
Yeah, great.
Because previously I'd had an episode I'd had two, both doing the national anthem at sporting events.
Yeah.
And both, like, one was like, it was cutting in and out and it was so hard to keep
time. I think you talked about that in the last show. You had to, did you flick it out or what did you end up doing?
Yeah, I definitely did that at one of them.
Mm.
But at the New Year's test at the SCG, not this year, last year, we did two sound checks. And then I went out to do the gig and it's about 3 minutes before. And they're like, in-ear check. And I'm like, not working. Oh, really? No, not working. Nothing at all coming through.
Jeez.
Oh, okay, we'll get that sorted. 30 seconds to go. In-ear check? No, there's still nothing. All right, well, you are going to go out with no in-ears. And so, so you just sort of go out absolutely naked. There's a bit of fallback.
Yeah.
But the thing about stadium gigs is everyone's singing that anthem as well, and it's all bounce back. So they're all singing it in different times. So it's actually like you want everyone
to shut the fuck up so you can concentrate.
Yep, but they're not because they're patriotic.
Yeah.
So you're basically just trying to keep time.
Just humming.
What's the mantra then?
Don't fuck it up.
Well, we had a comedian whose mantra before walking on stage was, I'm the best. I'm the best. I am the best. Which is, I guess, using words to center yourself, I guess, is.
Well, I guess it's like a confidence. Power. Yeah, he's creating a level of confidence which you, in these scenarios, you need.
Yeah.
I guess for some people, they need the extra confidence boost and other people need to recenter the other way.
Yeah.
How do you feel after the Sydney Opera House gig? Is the morning after, like, do you feel great or are you like, well, I've peaked now? Do you go into like a depressive mode like 3 days later where it's like, oh, I've fucking
peaked? It just goes straight to depression.
Yeah. Well, I just feel like I would. I feel like it's a high. It's the high and it's like, well, I've done it now.
Well, it was a high. Yeah. It was a super high. And
But tell us about the low. Tell us about the high first.
It was hard to get to sleep and I wanted to watch it back and my girlfriend Charlotte had come out from London to be there for it. Well, she came out to be there regardless, but it was a double thing that she got to see and we were just both on a high.
Yeah.
Then I think I couldn't get to sleep till like 3 a.m. maybe later, and then we had to get up at 6 for a flight back. So I think I was in that sort of sort of seedy hungover, although I hadn't really had anything to drink.
Yeah.
So it was just sort of a mess for a couple of days. I don't think I ever crashed.
Yeah.
It's good. I guess it's good. I mean, do you think you could choose to be grateful for the high?
I think it's also like
I'm shit now, that was so good yesterday, now today's bad.
I think part of it probably is like preparation in regards to like you've prepared for that moment. If that was your first gig that you'd landed, I think it would probably be a different sort of thing, right? It's sort of like hockey stick growth. You can fucking go up and then the crash is bigger, where it's like you've been building on this
and
for years and years.
Totally.
And years.
That's sort of my career. Like the amount of times I've been asked, oh, you know, people, can you go on The Voice or even people that work on the show or X Factor or whatever. And I was like, no, because I get the sense that for me, it would be sort of short-term gain, long-term pain.
Yeah, yeah.
It'd just be that, yeah, that spike, like an insulin spike.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's like having 6 violet crumbles in a minute. And so I've always gone...
Described my Easter.
So it's sort of steady. So yeah, I feel like I've been building up to that for over a decade.
Mm.
So it was sort of immense pride at the work, but then I just couldn't not be... Yeah, grateful for all the people around me, especially John Foreman, who I worked on the album with. And really, if he didn't want to work on that project with me, I know that he probably wouldn't have, asked me to do the gig. Mm-hmm. And then James, my manager again. And then I was really grateful for Charlotte because I was pretty nervy during the day of Australia Day, and she was, you know.
Can you eat?
No, I couldn't eat. I couldn't even iron my shirt well.
Oh, no. And she's iron my shirt well.
Oh, sweetheart. I own your wee shirt for you.
And,
great accent.
Got to get it in.
Scottish.
Yeah. And she was just like the kindest thing. So, there was a lot of that.
Yeah.
It was still a bit out of body again. I was sort of seeing it all and going, fuck, this is crazy.
James, his manager, actually demanded the fireworks.
Yeah, exactly. Josh only will perform with $10 million worth of fireworks.
Since we last saw you, I don't think you had a girlfriend.
Yeah.
Since I had you on the show, I've spoken to you since. She's a musician?
Singer-songwriter, yeah. I met her 3 weeks after I saw you guys.
Oh, crazy.
We're a good omen like that, I think.
Yeah, I really felt like you, like Jesus, delivered.
Yeah. We centered good. You and you found your way to Charlotte.
Yeah.
So don't thank us, please. No, I don't want to thank you.
Oh, okay. Yeah, sure. You won't get it. Thank you.
So only from a quick stalk from the photos you put, I can see that she's a musician. What's that like? My wife isn't a podcaster, isn't a video person. She's not in the same sort of creative space. How is that having a partner that is vying for a similar sort of, you know, a similar thing? Or is there no similar?
Do you have duets in the evenings?
Do you sing making bolognese?
Did you spell that J-E-W?
J-D-W.
Do you spell it duet?
Duet. Duet.
Oh, like, I did.
Duet. Yeah, should I say duet?
Duet.
Duet. Duet.
No, I suppose, yeah, J-E-W. Yeah, 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 yeah. I was 100% saying duet.
She's not true. We're actually writing a song at the moment called Love Is All We Need with John Foreman, which is great, which I'll get to drop on my album tour for the first time. So that's the first time we sort of collabed on anything.
Are you going to get her out on stage? Is she going to come out to Australia?
No, it's not a duet. It's not a duet. It's a
it's actually a duet with John and Josh. Charlotte's just third wheeling the
sidelines. It never feels competitive. It never has that vibe. It only feels supportive. She's very much in a sort of pop or indie pop world of singer-songwriting, and like the classical crossover artist, musical theatre guy is like, they're just not in the same realm.
Almost feels like different industries, do you think?
Yeah, but with a sort of great understanding of the shit that you go through, the emotional stuff, so that support is really strong.
And then is that a hard thing also? Because I could imagine both experiencing the same challenges, that could actually, I mean, one of you has to be strong at all times, you know, it's...
Or you both feel shit and you can feel shit together.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Which has happened, or you're both up, one's down. I mean, that's just how it is. Life, I just think as long as you have great communication and that you're empathetic and understanding, then, you know, you and you're not a dick or a duck, as she would say.
Yeah, a wee duck.
Things are normally fine. I mean, we're only sort of almost 6 months in. So, you know, we're still at in a
honeymoon
phase. It's a honeymoon phase to a degree, and to another degree. It's not. We've had a lot of challenges already because we do long distance. We've had 2 months together of those almost 6 months. So, you know, we've put ourselves into a pretty tough battle. As I said, I go over Thursday morning for a wee bit, and then she comes back out middle of June, and then I go back in July. So we're trying to do as much as we can to make the geography of it work. Yeah.
I was listening to Spotify the other morning, and I have like the weekly playlist type of thing, and I was like, fuck, I know this song. And it was your cover of Iris playing.
Really?
Yeah. So it was like Spotify was fucking in my feet. Well,
was that New Music Italy?
I don't know where. Yeah, it must be on that. No, but I think it was because I'd been listening a bunch previously or whatever, and it just sort of re-delivers songs that you'd heard or whatever.
But re-delivers songs that you really like.
Yeah, I think so. Well, that's it. Well, I do love fucking. I've said to Tommy that I prefer covers always over the original song.
Really? Why is that?
I think that it just like adds a different element to something. I don't know. It just feels like
it can go one of two ways: ruin it or make it better.
Yeah. Westlife, Uptown Girl,
better. More than Billy Joel.
Yeah. Smash Mouth's I'm a Believer.
This is also very telling of his music taste, which I don't think is
very great. 90s.
Yeah. It's
good. Hold on. The other day I posted something on Instagram, which was...
You bagged out Nickelback, which is one of my favourite artists.
I didn't actually say anything. It was just a long sigh and some rolled eyes.
I think you said nickel crap.
Oh, yeah, about that. Because... look
at this photograph. Is that Nickelback?
Yeah, that is. Mm. Every time I do it, makes me laugh. Had a couple of some kids back then. And what the hell was on Johnny's head? Like some of the worst lyrics of all time.
Yeah, great.
But I did a post about roses are red, April is grey, but in a few weeks, picture of Justin Timberlake.
I didn't fucking understand it at all.
I didn't get it.
No.
It's gonna be me. You didn't you didn't get the 90s reference. Like, I like how do people not get that?
I don't even think it's a 90s it's a very obscure, you've given people a riddle. It's not a meme.
It's an incredible riddle.
Yeah, I know, but it's a hard riddle.
And if you can
riddle.
Unlock a 90s pop culture reference.
Through a riddle.
You are, through a riddle, you, you're, that's basically Game of Thrones there.
The national anthem, the lyrics of the national anthem, can we go through it very quickly, or but slowly? How does the national anthem start again? Because I used to sing it
Australians,
in school.
Australians, all let us rejoice.
All let us rejoice, for we are young and free.
We've golden soil.
I thought it was like with.
No, no, we have golden soil. We've golden soil.
I think I should change it to
is it we've got, we've golden.
We've fucking got golden soil.
And a bunch of seen next Tuesday.
So we've
golden soil.
Yeah, we've
and
gold,
wealth for toil.
Wealth for toil. Our home is girt.
Is girt. It's by sea. Yeah, it's true.
I thought it was Kurt.
Did you really think?
I was just, you know, when you're butchering it in...
Like Douglas?
Kurt by sea.
Like Kurt Douglas.
Kurt. Is Gert
by sea, and then where does it go?
Our land abound.
Bound in nature's gifts.
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 Of beauty.
Beauty.
Rich and
rare.
Rare. Yeah.
In history's page.
Let every stage,
like every single stage. Advance.
Advance. Australia.
Fair.
Fair.
Yeah. Lyrically not great.
In
joyful strains.
Strains.
We used to say Straz.
Like
enjoy Straz and
let us sing.
Enjoy then let us sing.
Do you have to, as someone who has done the national anthem, do you need to know the second verse? No, you know, like is it a verse? Is it
beneath
a second?
Our radiant southern cross, we'll toil with hearts and hands.
I just handed it over to the crowd.
Make when do you this have to do commonwealth it? Of ours. Renowned through all the lands for those who've come across the seas with boundless plains to share. With courage, let us all combine to advance Australia's fair. In joyful strains, and let us sing advance Australia's fair. Yes, I've got a second verse.
When do you ever get to do the second verse?
On Australia Day, we did it.
Oh, really? Yeah. Oh, that's good.
But we did have it on the auto cue.
It's like the encore. It's like everyone's probably like goes to sit down and then you have another.
Yeah, I learned it at primary school. We had to do two verses of it every Monday or something at primary school.
Did you go to a Jewish primary school?
No.
No.
We went to Auburn South.
Yeah.
In East Hawthorne.
But then you went to Wesley.
Yeah.
We were pumping it out at Wesley.
Yep.
Pumping it out, beg your pardon.
Just pumping it out, you know.
What is that?
Pumping
mean?
Out the hoodlums.
On a Monday.
That's the dazzle.
What was the big hall at Wesley Pran?
Adamson.
Yeah, Adamson Hall.
Yeah. Jeez. That's where
it was your playground.
Yeah, that's where.
But I think lyrics can be up to interpretation with the when it comes
as in whether or not they're correct or
up to interpretation. The Straz example. But with when you're doing a cover, what is the actual, like, you know, you got all licensing and shit. I remember hearing somewhere where it's like, oh, Smash Mouth, I remember changed I'm a Believer slightly to the Monkees version because I loved the Monkees version. Did you have to, when you were doing Iris, did you change certain words to give it a bit of J-pizzle?
Yeah, I did it in Italian.
Was it changing Italian? 30%?
Yeah, so that's a strong change.
So from a translation point of view, do you have to, like, was that part of it, being in Italian? I can't even fucking remember that it was in Italian. I was still into it.
Yeah.
And I still even knew the song. I was probably fucking singing in English. No idea.
Which is cool because some people people have, you know, responded to it, have said, oh, I've tried to learn it phonetically in Italian. And some people go, no, I just sing along in English.
Yeah.
That's great.
I think that's what I was doing.
And just, so there's no copyright. You don't have to worry about that when it's...
No, you still pay APRA, which is the governing body. Mm-hmm. And therefore the original writer still... makes a buck out of it.
Yeah,
so cool.
And I mean, but some were like, the version of Creep I did was actually already a cover in Italian. And the
my version of Creep is original.
Yeah.
I'm just a creep.
Yeah, that's what it's just going for. That's your shtick.
That's your shtick. So the guy who the Italian guy.
So were you
guy,
covering the cover then?
Yeah, because the lyrics have got nothing to do with being a creep. The lyrics, it's the song's actually called Adonio Costo, which is at any cost. Mm. And it's about typical Italian thing. It's about ending up with a woman who treats you like shit at any cost. You're just a slave to this woman. So it's got actually nothing to do with being a weirdo. Oh,
it's about being a cuck.
At any cuck.
At any cuck.
Is the Josh Simons on the show before, who's
Have Josh's?
We're a Josh.
We've had a lot of Josh Fields Milburn, Josh Jansen. Mm. He's on all the time.
Yeah.
Annoying.
What a fucking
Josh
idiot.
Bitterman, Josh Simons.
But Josh Simons was talking about he's performed at big state or like arenas or whatever it is, and he was talking about that you make bank basically when you perform your own song, if you've like written and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Have you ever had one of those experiences where it's like, fuck, not only have I got this great experience, but I'm doing one of my own tracks. So based on the amount of people that are in the audience, I'm going to walk away doing all right.
No, because this song, Love Is All We Need, is my first original.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I like being a crossover artist. You generally do a lot of covers. Mm. Like you sit there, you're singing "Time to Say Good," but like a million times over. Great tune, cracking tune. The old Bocelli, you know, just a winner. So to do your own stuff is a bit rare.
Yeah.
But I really want to write stuff. I've been writing poetry for quite some time. Mm-hmm. And it just
do you read poems much?
Yeah.
I just bought a book called How to Read Poems.
First word and then the next and then the next.
No,
and then
there's
the next.
A whole – it was fucking a big book too.
Jeez.
Dan DeBoof, who we've had on the show, recommended it for me to read. But anyway,
has it changed the way
– It's like I haven't read nothing about reading poems.
It's more of a signalling. I'm like, I'm a creative, artistic guy who cares about
so
poems.
So is it one of those things where you go for coffee somewhere in Fitzroy or Colling and you just have it?
Yeah.
Does a poem translate to a song? Is that
not always
why you write poems?
Not always. Well, Charlotte said to me that that sometimes my lyric writing is too poetic. It's too much governed by perfect rhymes and all that kind of stuff.
I love a good rhyme.
Yeah, I love a good rhyme too. But she's like, no, you need some sort of imperfect rhymes and stuff like that. Just like it doesn't need to be so clinical.
Mm.
So I'm working on that. I'm working on that. So she sort of grabbed the song that I've written and tore it apart to make it
took out four of the rhymes.
Yeah, so took out all of it.
Well, I feel like rhyming could potentially, like Brie found her old diaries when she was growing up and she found that there was a lot of rhyming, like when she was doing poems. It feels like it's when you're in school, it's a very common thing. When you think poetry, you got to think every fucking line has to rhyme. With the
in time.
Yeah, in time, yeah. Exactly.
Because otherwise it's a crime. It's you'll receive a fine and no one will eat
limes. Perfect. Another great Instagram bit. Yeah. The is the lyric writing versus the poetry stuff, do a lot of people start poem, then turn it into lyrics? Is there
then get a girlfriend who tells them to pull their head in. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Pull out a few of those.
I don't know. I don't know what people's journeys are. Like for Lottie, like Charlotte, she went and did a Bachelor of Arts in songwriting. So she spent 3 years of writing a song every day, really.
Yeah.
So you just get, you probably create your own methodology and whether or not you write poetry on the side or whatever is, I'm not sure. I don't know how. I think people approach it from all different angles. Mm. I reckon Daniel Johns probably writes a lot of poetry. He seems like a pretty poetica.
Is he still playing? Is he still?
I'm sure he is. I'm sure they're creating stuff. He seems like too creative a man to not create. But yeah, some of the rhymes in this song that I was working on were too poetic. Mm. The poetry I read is a lot of love poetry. Anyone ever read Atticus?
No.
Yeah, it's pretty romantic, magical shit.
So is it that's good? What like do you read it and go, fuck, that was good. That was a good rhyme.
Chuck us your phone.
Love a poetry cover.
Have you got? Can you read a poem that you've read? You've written.
What about poetry, like Spotify for poetry?
Yeah, well, just there's poems what's that? What's that? Slam poetry.
If you have to
freestyle poetry,
if you have to search for an Instagram account to find the poetry, it's very new age of you.
I could imagine you'd get into slam poetry.
He's about to read us memes, guys. This is a great one, a '90s reference. No one will get. about
grade. So this is Atticus.
This is Atticus. We just want to find a
good. So it was Atticus.
Oh, here we go. She was someone who, if the plane was going down and everyone was screaming, she would look me in the eyes and laugh, and her laugh would make me laugh. And then we'd both be laughing, the two crazy people laughing as our plane was going down.
Oh, wow. That's like Malaysia Airlines.
Yeah.
Little poem there.
Yeah, that's, what was that? Flight 70? Yeah.
MH.
Little bit dark.
Little bit dark. So
that's nice.
Fast. I mean, so I don't really write a lot of stuff to do with plane crashes.
Yeah. That's not your shtick.
That's not my shtick.
Don't do that on a fucking, you know, Jetstar flight or whatever. They'll take you off.
But I definitely do some.
Is this yours?
Yeah, this is a bit mine.
And you put a little background on it.
Yeah, he signed it off Jay Pizzle. Oh, my God.
When he looked into her eyes, he saw her soul and similarly felt vulnerable enough to allow her to do the same. They were intertwined physically, emotionally, and spiritually. It was the deepest love they'd ever made. So that was
before they crashed the plane.
Yeah, before the plane crashed because they were trying to join the Mile High Club and it all went wrong. So that's a bit of my vibe.
Do you journal?
Yeah, daily.
Really? Have you got, like, I want to get into fountain pens. Do you have a fountain pen?
No, I have a biro that I use terribly. I'm a terrible writer. Like, I'm the son of a doctor, but I should be a doctor myself.
Yeah, bad handwriting.
That sounds like a poem. I'm a son of a doctor. I should be a doctor myself.
What's the next part?
Self.
It doesn't have to be perfect,
right? I need some help. Some help.
Yeah. Save him. No, he's actually saying help.
Yeah. No, that was beautiful. I think if you repeat things multiple times, it has more cut through.
Yeah, as long as when you read it, you make every time you say it slightly different. It's like it's like when you sing a song, you can't say help. You'd say help.
I think the help was the same each time. But it was definitely the pause is different.
What are you writing about in your journal? Writing about nothing, whatever.
It's a gratitude journal. So I start the day with three things I'm grateful for in life. One thing I changed from yesterday, an action or a behavior or something that happened. I write.
How often are they based on food? I feel like it would always be for me. Like, I wish I didn't have those fucking Easter eggs.
Yeah. It's a food diary, mate.
how often is it that food related?
It sometimes is, like, didn't need the third donut.
Yeah.
Occasionally.
Yeah, sure.
And then it's some I am mantras, like I was talking about I am before I go on stage, that sort of stuff. And then three things that I'm going to do today. So, like, it might be I'm going to train or I'm not going to be an absolute asshole to Josh and Tommy, like something.
Right. Intention.
Intention
for the day.
Yeah. Do you fit it into like an A4? How big is the...
My journal would be an A5 journal.
Half an A4? Is that what that is?
I believe so.
Small book.
Yeah.
Just a small book.
And it's a really nice thing to do at the start of the day. So it's like that and meditate and like it's just sort of sets my day up to go reflect on... Mm-hmm. life a bit and to reflect on the people in my life and things in my life because I think we can just go about business and just forget about that stuff. And then it sort of sets up my day so I know that it, like those three intentions, I go, well, do I look back on it the day after and go, did I achieve those things? Why didn't I achieve?
So you look back. I think looking back is good.
Yeah.
So you do present. So grateful for now.
Yep.
Past.
Something that I would
change.
And then intentions for the day.
And some I ams, which are mantras. Yeah.
I've been doing quite a bit of consistent meditation. This month, I haven't missed a day. But I've just been thinking.
Is that new for you?
Well, this year, since I've seen you, definitely. I mean, my mum was a meditation teacher, has been for a very long time before it was cool. But I've got into it a lot more
now.
We're
not asking if your mum meditated. Did you meditate? No, the answer is no.
But what I'm saying is, and where I'm going with this is, I've been realizing lately from meditating, I've been thinking about times in my life. So I was thinking about a time where I was in a different relationship and where my mind was at and how I wasn't meditating. And I was thinking, fuck, like my mind now is racing, but I'm more present of what my thoughts are and where I'm focusing on them. I was like, without that, it's like fucking dangerous looking back.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what, like, that's one of the main things.
A consciousness.
It's just a hyper, it's thinking awareness. About thinking, cognitive dissonance, is that it? Thinking about thinking?
It's like the opposite of awareness.
Yeah, and so thinking about my thinking, it's like, fuck, I feel like I was a different person when I wasn't doing that.
Mm. And we all do that. It's like storylining. Mm. So, you know, we create an idea that doesn't exist. It's not fact. Mm. Like,
it's my favorite
that,
thing to do.
That, yeah, that person hates me. That person absolutely hates me. And you go back to a conversation you had with them, and you take it from a perspective that is one-sided and jaded with all the things that you are putting on it rather than what maybe actually happened if you were someone watching that conversation. Mm. And then you spiral down a line of catastrophizing and nightmaring about this. And then you sort of believe in this fiction about your relationship with this person.
That's why I can't have social media. I've retired from my personal social media. Yeah, but just because it's like, it's so easy to like click through and being like, oh yeah. Mm. And then you can create these stories, and then before you know it, all these people who you actually normally like in real life, you think are fucking idiots online. So it's
was the Nickelback moment, wasn't it?
Nickel crap, I believe, is what you said. Was it Nickel crap? Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Do you think Nickelback get a hard time though? In all seriousness, or no? You think they epitomize?
I think they give zero fucks because they're making bank.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
They've become the meme though, right?
Yeah.
For a lot of people. It's like, they think it's shit music, but I'll listen to it and laugh and sing along.
Yeah.
Back to your medis.
Yes.
What do you think's changed as a person, as a dad, as a partner, as a partner?
Mm. Well, I think just this realization of in a constant showing up to think about my thinking, where I've always thought and I've thought, oh, I can sort of go deep and think about my thinking, but that showing up and doing it every day and just thinking about thoughts and what they are and how much meaning they actually have. One thing that this meditation program is doing is he's saying when a thought comes in, don't shut it out, actually observe it, and it actually then just slowly disappears. And so it's like this weird fucking thing that thoughts that are coming in, I'm not choosing for them to come in. Mm. They're just happening and disappearing, and then something else is coming. So I'm just sort of, I'm in the early days of exploring the understanding of thought.
And yeah, I'm no guru on this at all, but that is the whole idea of being the witness or the observer. Mm. I think Andy Puddicombe, who is the creator of Headspace, which is a really well used app, describes those thoughts as clouds. Mm. And that our state of contentment is blue sky. That's sort of joy. Like if joy is everlasting and happiness is fleeting, joy is blue sky and the clouds are just thoughts. And if we allow them just to go past, notice them, see them and just allow them to go past, they will go past and we will go back to blue sky. But often what we do is we turn a white cloud into a grey cloud into a giant storm, and then the whole sky is filled with storms. Yeah. And we've actually created that.
Yeah,
it wasn't actually anyone who's put that on us. It's not an external, it's an internal. And what we lack doing often is actually taking responsibility for that. And
it's confronting. I think it's confronting to know that it's like, oh, this situation isn't about this person or that person, and this story is only the reality that you've created. But you can choose.
Yeah, it's me.
Yeah.
And that requires you to be, a bit more vulnerable, a lot more vulnerable. And especially in Australian society, especially with men, I think we still have mega, mega issues with what it is to be a vulnerable man. I think we still have that football mentality of
KO. Oh,
yeah, I just
24 hours
she'll
a day.
She'll be right.
50 sports.
Yeah, KO. Yeah.
Fuck Foxtel.
Yeah, well, like that. It's just like a toxic masculinity thing that men aren't allowed to be in touch with that stuff. But also that's the same toxic masculinity that is a part of a one-punch culture.
Yeah.
It
hurts us. I think that the interesting thing with talking about that is it's not just affecting externally. It affects our fucking souls and what we're, what we're doing.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And affects the potential of you being the greatest version of yourself. Yeah.
The concert that you're putting on, the tour.
Yes.
So it's around Australia, is it? What's the plan?
The plan is Sydney on June 8th, at the Eternity Playhouse, which is in Sydney, obviously, and then up to Brizzy at QPAC on the 20th.
Do you fly everywhere? I just when I think of a tour, I just think of fucking
Australia's too fucking big.
Get in a bus.
Too big.
I heard a comedian yesterday just like talk about how he was in, oh, you know, I went to New Zealand. It's like Queenstown. Then I went to this other place. It was like the other end of the island. Mm-hmm. It's the same with Australia. Yeah. It's like if you go to Melbourne, you're not at the Gold Coast.
Yeah.
It's fucking ages
away. It's ages away. Yeah. And look, if I was doing like Shep and then Wodonga and then Gander guy or like something good. Like that, then I would
you'd doing all the
but I'm doing the main
Jay Pizzle regional tour.
I'm gonna say that for next year.
Do you know what, because I heard as well that like if you're part of is it like APRA, you get like Virgin like
we can get that
baggage.
Have you heard of the luggage thing? Sign up for that.
Really?
As filmmakers you can sign up for APRA.
So Virgin Australia, they like you always see the like artists and stuff in the priority line, and I've heard from musos that if you're part of, I think it's APRA, you can basically get priority and you get more bags and stuff.
That's cool. Yeah. Well, musicians are local in each city.
Okay, great.
Except for my music director, who's also a piano a guy called Jack Earl, who's de Balm. So yeah, we go from Brizzy, then we go down to Melbourne on the 22nd. So Melbourne's got two shows, the rest have one.
And what's the biggest venue?
The Melbourne ones. Alex Theatre is about 500.
Yeah. Which is small fry compared to 60,000. and no fireworks.
And no, definitely no fireworks.
Really underwhelmed with this.
This is like, don't even come, just watch one YouTube clip. Yeah.
This is a development for you in regards to, is this like the first one that you've done solo?
Yeah, first solo tour. Mm-hmm. I mean, last year was the first album, so it's taking some tracks from that and then some tracks that I want to put onto a new one, obviously the original we've talked about, and some classics like Time to Say Goodbye and some duets with
your favourite people from the Jewish community.
That's just me heading from St Kilda down to Balaclava and
remembering that's a solid idea. Rabbi Yavi.
Rabbi Rubenstein, who I know from the Turak Synagogue, who's always saying, let's do Nessun Dorma, but let's do it to the tune of Adon Olam. And because they all do that. Sorry, Rabbi Rubenstein, not your gig this one.
Do you have a like an opening act, or is it just
it's just me. It's an 100-minute concert with a little interval, and I think the best way to describe it is Bocelli meets Bublé.
Cool.
So it's very off the cuff. Like there's no dinner suit vibe. I'm pretty sure I'll be barefoot for some of it. Yeah, I always love to sing barefoot around the house. So it's sort of the vibe is to try and just welcome you into, you know, my home and sort of, you know, make that classical sound accessible to everyone. It's classical music, but it's not a classical show.
Yeah.
You're not going to the opera here.
I like that. I like the mixing and the matching of that sort of stuff.
Yeah. Right? And I mean, there'll be a rock rug on the stage because a lot of the repertoire is pop and rock songs have been.
What's a rock rug?
You know,
is that like drums? You know, like do they use it to?
But you know that like Persian rug that that you always see in a rock 100%. Concert or in a rock studio.
Yeah,
yeah, that sort of vibe. Oh, so, amazing.
If you still need the Persian rug, I know a guy who is actually legitimately going out of business. I know that you hear the rug stuff a lot.
Yeah, but
he's got about 17 thou that he owes to like an Indian supplier, but they are Persian rugs. They're all handmade.
So if you need a Persian rug.
Yeah.
Drum rug. The annoying thing is actually transporting that.
Yeah.
I think he's got all the stock.
Like the musicians, we might pick up rugs locally.
Good idea. Yeah. Rent a rug's a great
Or just
service.
Have a mate who's got a rug. But if he wants to sponsor the tour,
I think he's mainly relying on cash at the moment. Okay. But the your audience, how do you describe your audience?
Middle-aged women.
There are some middle-aged women. There's some really young people too. Mm. A lot of the feedback from the album was from people in their 30s, late 20s and 30s, who for whatever reason don't connect fully with like the real classical music. They won't go and see Turandot or Tosca or Madame Butterfly, but they want to connect with it, but they needed an avenue in. And
this
so
is like a gateway drug. It's like me listening to Iris or whatever, yeah, amongst all my other stuff. It's like it fits. The funny thing is when you hear it, it sort of it fits in some way to pop music, yeah, as well.
So really I'm like a bong and and opera is like smack.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
So yeah, I mean, and you know, everyone wants to do a billy from time to time. Yeah, so
and a bong's not gonna ruin your life.
It's actually gonna chill your life out. Yeah, absolutely. Just a little bit.
And you definitely need a Persian rug if you're gonna do a bong as well.
Yeah,
perfect setting for it.
Yeah, it's got that vibe.
Yeah, so I mean that's what the feedback was. It was a lot of people in their 30s actually. Mm-hmm. Saying that, they're like, oh, exactly what you're saying. It didn't feel like opera, but I felt like I got a bit of that. And that's exactly what I feel like I am. Like you said, I'm not like your sort of standard opera guy. I just happen to love singing like that. But I, you know, bang it out to Informer by Snow or Shoop by Salt and Pepper.
Are you good singing the other way? Do you think?
Like at singing.
I don't know.
Informer. You know, so that means somebody like a Blair.
No, but as in singing how Charlotte sings. I guess that's so. It's genre singing. So,
like indie pop stuff.
Yeah. So if you were to sing indie pop, so you drop. There's no accent. There's no Italian.
You're not doing your shtick.
You're not a classical
fat style man trapped in a ripped guy's body. Operatic
singing. I think I can do that. Like when you got classical training, you can. You know what you're doing with your voice. Like technically, I'm quite good at knowing how to manipulate sounds and and all of that. But I just don't – I think if I spent my time, you know, wanting to do Never Made It As A Wise Man, Couldn't Cut It As A Poor Man Stealing, isn't that Nickelback? Yeah. Never Made It As A Wise Man.
That's a good song.
Yeah. Not a good song. Or Do I A Little Bit Of Green Day.
I don't like Green Day.
No, I don't like Green Day either.
Did you know that the lead singer of Green Day wished that Steve Jobs would die of cancer? He said that on stage. And it was all because of iTunes and how much they got paid from iTunes. It's a bit of a...
That's not a nice thing to say.
It's definitely not nice.
So I got off Green Day.
For that reason alone?
I liked American Idiot.
I've chatted to people about this. I think what he did was watch episodes of The Simpsons, take an impersonation of Krusty the Clown, and then move it into a vocal style, because there's not much difference between. It's the same thing.
So are these people putting on?
Well, I reckon a lot of artists did it after. Is it Dave Grohl?
Was he Foo Fighters?
Foo Fighters. Oh no! Who's
Nickelback?
Who's Pearl Jam?
I don't know anyone. You've stretched my references.
Watch on the clock, it's fuck. That thing became everyone had to do it. Even Celine Dion was doing it for a while. That was a style.
You shouldn't be able to tell the lyrics. Like that was a style for a long time, which is like if you can understand what they're saying, they're not doing a good job of singing.
Yeah.
I
wasn't into that, any of those styles of singing.
Yeah.
I didn't want to pursue that. But I think if I did go down that track, you go... It's once again what I was talking about. Like if you go hard work at Nickelback style, you can be the next Nickelcrap.
Yeah.
What's the worst piece of advice you've heard from someone around career stuff?
Oh, I did get an advice from a singing teacher once, very, very early on when I was struggling to hit the notes, because I was technically not proficient, which was do whatever you can, just get it out.
Just get it out.
Not ideal. That's one way to get nodules.
Yeah. Do you think they saw you in front of the Sydney Opera House and thought, I fucking told him everything he knows?
Just before silence, just before you did the big note, just get it out.
Just get it out. So that's probably not great advice.
What about advice in respects to career and just not sort of specific to your voice, but to musical theatre as a career for you? Or anything that sort of...
People always say, you know, that I always get into my least favourite question when you're like, you know, you meet one of your parents' friends at a coffee shop or whatever. They always touch you on your wrist. It's always begins with a wrist touch.
Quick wrist.
It's so you can't move.
So you can't escape. And what are you up to?
Yeah.
And then you go, in my head, I go, do I want to go down the spiel? No, I can't be fucking going. Spiel.
Yeah.
I do the oh, not much at the moment, just, you know, working on some things. It'll come to the fore soon. It must be really tough.
It's a very the sympathetic.
It's a very, like, and yeah. It's patronizing and sympathetic at the same time.
Do you just grab him by the elbow and just say, it must be tough being you, lady. Just walk off.
Yeah, well, I either give him the sort of whatever that mouth is.
Yeah.
Nod.
Just or like I give the struggling art. Like, I think there is something in the struggling artist, which sometimes it's easier just to play into that and people think that that's the life, you know? Just being like, oh, yeah, stuff's, it's always hard finding work, but, you know.
If you are feeling that, then I think it's a problem. I felt a bit of that at a family event of just what we're doing and us understanding it and knowing the direction, the vision. And it's, maybe it's a piece in my communication, or I've entered into that, yeah, we're just doing this, like very broad, and then their concern is, I don't understand what they're doing or the risk they're taking, so that's what they end up projecting. So, but I don't know if it is.
But if it's like, if we can't get close, like the thing is that we have a North Star, we know where we're sort of headed, but we don't know the steps necessarily. So how can we expect those people around us to have any concept of those steps? And so part of it is understanding that we know that there's going to be steps there. We don't necessarily know the order. We don't know what it looks like, but we know they're there. Mm. And so I guess that's part of it, is it's like understanding what's like, if we don't, we're in it every day and we have just enough clarity to move forward, they've definitely got no fucking idea.
Yeah, but what you want from them, I guess, is like to approach you judgment free. And what you see on their faces is riddled with excessive judgment.
Is it based on their inability to live the life that they want? Like, are they?
Well, that's what I always think it comes down to. Yeah. And sometimes I say, well, no, not much at the moment, but, you know, couldn't have it any other way. I'm living my passion.
Yeah.
And
because it's almost them projecting their thing, which is like, you know what? I'm at a cafe. Like, I would have loved to take up poetry or painting or whatever, but I'm doing X, Y, and Z.
I mean, and so you create. Hope it's on this deep level that they're not. That's not the surface thought. That's the go-to based on their life experience. But I don't know how many people.
That's a narrative thing.
That's what I'm saying. I don't know how much it is. Maybe it's just some confusion in what you're up to. I mean, what would be the way to do it? I'm killing it.
No, but do we? But I don't think that you need to necessarily. Like, you don't owe them anything, right? Like, and so the part of it is it's like, I think, and this is the hard bit of the balance of, we create our own narratives, but I think we did a fucking great job of creating the narrative of what the lady at the cafe was thinking.
Yeah.
But, oh, God. But she did do a strong and wrist touch.
Yeah, exactly.
And that always has a backstory.
But the thing is, we're all just triggering we're all triggering each other for different things, right? And so part of it is, it's like, even though it's our narrative and all that sort of thing, there is a bit of that, which is like, if we were to take that in, if we were to take everyone as face value, it's like, oh, there's a lot of doubt. Mm-hmm. Like, she's got a lot of doubt for me, or that thing, she doesn't seem very confident, where it's like, also the reality is like, she hasn't done a tour. She hasn't done all this stuff. She hasn't done. And so how would she, it's not even from an area of being malicious. She just doesn't understand.
Mm. Yeah.
Which is fuck it. But it's just hard to work out, because it's like, you, in that moment, when you hear someone who's saying something that is naive, you want to fucking correct them and sort of put them in their place and say, hey, this is actually what it is. But
well, if I sometimes I want to say that, because it's truth. Look, if I'm working in a long-term gig, that doesn't necessarily mean I'm happier than when I'm in creative mode for something that I'm creating myself.
Yeah.
And like, I just can't. You know, we don't need to go into that conversation at a cafe with a wrist touch, but it's true. Like the I think the life of startup self creators is complex.
Yeah,
and those who run in a 9-to-5 system, who've always done that and who've never seen the other side, they sometimes it's just really hard to understand what that is and where. What our muse is, what our joy is, like, they just can't get it because they haven't experienced it.
You've got there's a lot of noise around us,
yeah.
And I think if you were to look back at you 10 years ago, like, if you listened to all that noise, you wouldn't actually make the first step.
And I did,
You did listen to it?
Oh, yeah, I did a lot. And it's only been in the last sort of chapter of my life where I go, I know exactly what I want to do. Mm. I know how I want to do it. Whether or not I'm good enough at the moments that count is up to me to a degree, or whether or not I'm liked in the moments that count is maybe not up to me to a degree. But at least I have a really good understanding of my path that I want to live out. It's not based on what's going to please other people or what other people want me to live out.
Absolutely. Mate, thanks for coming on the show. We'll have to the old wrist touch. we'll have to have you. So when are you in Melbourne specifically? The
22nd of June. Mm-hmm.
So yeah. How long does that go, that whole tour? How long is that whole tour period?
Couple of weeks. So okay. it's at the moment.
It's over quick, isn't it?
So I know four shows. Hopefully Brisbane and Sydney sell well and we get to put on another show, but Melbourne definitely has two shows. So little plug, head to Josh Pitterman with one T.com and you can get tickets.
Do you have to, do a lot of people spell your name wrong? Do
they? Always a double Pitterman. T. Yeah.
Pitterman. Pitterman.
It's like Pitterman.
Yeah, I get it. You have to come in. We're moving into our new office next week, so you have to
come in and do a cover.
So many walls.
Fuck, we should definitely.
Can you do a funny cover? Italian version.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, what for the next show?
Yeah, I'm going to do Nickelback.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's a Daily Talk Show. Josh Pitterman, thanks for coming on the show. We'll see you tomorrow, guys.
See you guys.